secret.
I brought down an NDP poster. Fairbanks.
Marla?
The occasion.
Get me a couple chairs for...
Is it national, NDP, or...
Representative Pearson, there. This afternoon, we're going to take up again House Bill number 81 and 89. Since there is a lot of confusion about the House Finance Committee on these bills, we're going to try these bills up again, and I thought I'd take a few minutes to explain these particular proposals. If you review the language of the Budget Reserve Fund statute included in the file, and then look at House Bill 81, you will see that House Bill number 81 changes substantive law. The governor's bill, House Bill number 81, would add an additional section to the language of the Budget Reserve statute that would allow the governor to transfer money from the fund to the general fund basically at will. This is not a temporary law change. It would be a permanent language in the statute. The governor should not have this much authority. Clearly, the legislature is the only body that has the power to appropriate money. A transfer of money, however, is more of a gray area. We should not add to the grayness by passing House Bill 81. I don't think the legislature wants to give up the power of the purse. So, you have before you a finance CS to consider today. Before you hear the details, let me say else first. The issue really involves three different problems. First, the treasurer is running out of cash to pay its bills. This is commonly referred as the cash flow problem. Second, we have a deficit of somewhere between $600 and $875 million. This is not to be confused with the cash flow problem. If we merely allow the governor to transfer the money between the budget reserve fund and the general fund, we have given him the cash he needs, but we still have an appropriation on the books. Therefore, we still have a deficit of $600 to $875 million. The third thing, we have a complicated accounting system. Although we may want to discuss that system in the course of considering House Bill 81 and 89, we are not addressing the problems of the state accounting system in either bills. Now the detail on House Bill 89. The proposed CS for House Bill 89 finance is different from the original bill, only in two ways. First, it increases the amount of disaster release by $990,000 because of the recent disaster in Kotzebue. Details on all disasters and the amounts requested are in your file. Mr. Roundtree was also available for any one of you to discuss any of the disasters in Alaska. Second, Section 3 of the bill now addresses both the deficit and cash flow problems by appropriating the balance of the budget reserve fund to the general fund. By this action, the legislature will reduce the deficit substantially, and at the same time, we will address the cash flow problem without giving away any of the appropriation powers. I feel strongly that we should not delegate this authority to the executive branch. Passage of this version of House Bill 89, however, is not a complete solution to the governor's need for flexibility if another cash flow problem develops in the 1988 session. Therefore, I propose the following. If you'll take a look of the markup section of the old rainy day fund statute included in your file, if there is an agreement, we can add such language to the budget reserve fund statute. This will give the governor the flexibility he needs to address future cash flow crisis. Such actions should be coupled with the end of the session appropriation to the budget reserve fund, if, and I say if, our revenues and spending plan allows us to do so. Since we cannot have final answers to these questions today, I suggest that we pass out the finance CS for 89 today, and that we put House Bill 81 into a subcommittee consisting of myself as Chair, Pashaw, and Rieger, with the intention of discussing and addressing future cash flow problems at a later date. But one of the problems that we had when we took this up is we needed some more detail on the cash flow problems. I'm hoping that, Mr. Barker, that you would come up and address this one more time to the committee. And also, Mr. Hogan, we will probably have questions regarding OMB on this. If you would join them also, please. Just pull up your chair. one of the problems that we have also is that various newspapers have reported the hostage of this particular bill in relation to capital projects. One of the things that we need to address also this afternoon is what can be done on this with the restriction or unrestrictions, because there are some things that I think is getting misunderstood by the press here. Mr. Barker, would you address, please, for us the spending plan as far as the cash flow one more time, please, and the deficit.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Milt Barker, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. As the Chairman indicated, we have two problems. One, the deficit with respect to appropriations, and the other is the cash flow problem. The difference between the two is that the deficit of maybe as much as $875 million arises by comparing the appropriations with restrictions that have been put in place by the governor's action. Comparing those appropriations to the total amount of revenues expected to be received through FY87 produces a deficit of on the order of $800 million. You compare the actual expenditures that will be made pursuant to those appropriations to the revenues to be received through FY87, you have your cash problem. And I think outlined last time that not all of the money that's been appropriated is going to be spent in fiscal year 87. You have mainly capital projects that will be spent to a certain extent in later years. So that's why they are two different numbers, and that's, I think, the reason for considering the action of balancing the books with respect to the appropriations deficit at this time as well. It will solve the cash problem, but it will kill two birds with one stone here. The committee requested that we provide more detail as to when the cash problem will actually arise. And in a letter to the chairman, which I believe you all have a copy of, there are two schedules attached. One is a table which indicates the approach under House Bill 81. We had a question as to how much would be drawn from the budget reserve fund if the House Bill 81 approach allowing for temporary transfers were put in place. And so that table shows you day by day through the rest of the fiscal year what the draw would be. I think a little more helpful to see when the cash problem actually arises is to look at the second document, which is a day-by-day of the projected general fund balance through the end of the fiscal year, starting with February. And it's labeled General Fund Cash Projection. The bottom line is the balance in the general fund. And if you page through this, you can see that during the month of February, utilizing this projection with all its weaknesses and necessary assumptions, the general fund balance would fall to as little as $6.3 million during February. Now, that's a guess, really. It assumes that we have an equal expenditure each and every day of the amounts that we don't know as to the date of their expenditure. We have identified in this projection certain major expenditures whose date and amount we know, and those are detailed and shown in the array here, or the spreadsheet, as to the date they occur. But a significant portion of the expenditures are just the miscellaneous costs of state government, be they municipal debt reimbursement, payments to contractors on construction projects, welfare payments, travel, whatever. So those amounts are spread on a day-by-day basis pro rata. Obviously, they're not going to happen that way, so this general fund balance, if there's one thing that's sure about it, it's sure to be wrong. There's going to be variability in expenditures. There's going to be variability in the cash coming in, and I would just say that to get through the month of February with a balance of $6.3 million is probably a fairly long shot, given that there will be variability in these expenditures. However, the overall thrust of this projection indicates that we might skate by in February. If you continue with the projection, the first actual deficit with respect to the general fund cash balance occurs on March 9th, the third page of the projection. It's not in excess of $8 million until about March 26th, when payroll goes out, and it jumps to $32 million. At the end of the month, we have some revenues coming in, the main petroleum revenues, royalty and severance, and it pushes the balance almost, pushes it slightly above zero again. But beginning April 1st, there are significant amounts of debt service payments that go out on state general obligation bonds, which pushes the cash balance in the hole by $66 million, and it gets worse from there on out. By the last page, which is June 30th, let's look at the next to the last day, because property taxes and, again, royalty and severance comes in on June 30th. On June 29th, the net deficit cash-wise would be $315 million. Now, these projections utilize the January revenue projections, and if oil prices hold at current levels, the additional revenue that we might experience this year would be on the order of $200 to $250 million. So conceivably, we might wind up on June 29th only being $100 million or so in the hole. However, any amount less than zero is going to put a halt to the payment of state bills. And when that point is going to come, given the fact that we don't have new revenue projections yet, and that they're always uncertain anyway, and that we can't predict expenditures with any great accuracy on a day-by-day basis, I think it's fair to say that sometime well before June 30th we would run into trouble, and possibly even this month of February yet. I would say that $6.3 million for a $2 billion operation is pretty slim working capital. If you had a corporation that was looking at $6.3 million in working capital and had $2 billion in operations, they'd either be preparing to negotiate a loan or to file bankruptcy proceedings. And I just don't think it's prudent for the state to try to skate through this month with $6.3 million. But we might manage to get by. Mr. Chairman, that's, I think, an outline of what it looks like for the rest of this year with respect to the state's cash position.
Okay. Questions on that? Yes, Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first question I have is on beyond June 30th. I've looked at not the general fund cash flow balance, but there's another printout which shows the effect on the budget reserve fund, and it shows continued draws on the budget reserve fund beyond the end of this fiscal year. And I was wondering what the assumption was that causes the budget to still be out of balance.
Mr. Chairman, as I explained in the letter, the FY88 figures assume the governor's budget as proposed. However, they do not incorporate any assumptions about additional revenues. So it's an unrealistic scenario. At this point, we do not have any basis for which to make a projection as to what the revisions will be made to the state's tax or revenue structure, and therefore it's basically an out-of-balance situation for FY88. Assuming that the budget as enacted for FY88 is in balance, hopefully there will be no significant deterioration in the state's cash position after June 30th. However, until we know what the revenue actions or what expenditure revisions might be made to bring that into balance, it's not really possible to say how the cash situation would develop.
Continue.
I guess the other questions I had were more for Mr. Hogan. Is it okay to question Mr. Hogan at this time, or would you have some testimony also?
Yes. Anything on cash flow, and then we'll go into, you get the Did you have something, Peter, on cash flow?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to understand this next chart that followed the first one, I guess. Just to understand whether I need more information on that to feel I've gotten your whole presentation. I certainly don't quite understand what it says. Maybe you can tell me.
This
cash flow chart.
Yes, there are various months. If you're looking at the corner in the third line down, and that's basically you've got to take them by month, and that's what he's trying to show you.
This is over a period of 29 months. Is that what's happening?
No, sir. This is a day-by-day projection. If you look in the upper left-hand corner, it indicates what the month pertains to. Then the first row there, the numbers indicate the day of the month. The total expenditures or revenues for that month are the first column, and then they're spread day by day.
I follow. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Hogan. One of the things that we have is we have the daily news and its reporters confused. And hopefully that one of the things I'd like you to look at is to tell the committee regarding if you put the money in, what is restricted, unrestricted, what can we pay it out of there with the versus capital or even in government. And I think we have a problem there. I don't think that this particular body is holding this particular bill on hostage for a capital budget or anything like that. But would you... because you have recently today has introduced House Bill number 132, an act approving and ratify restrictions on expenditures and providing an effective date. And so hopefully with your testimony that you can clear the daily news and its editorials up here for us, please. You know, they're...
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jay Hogan, Director of Budget Review, OMB. I'm not sure I can clear up news articles, but I'll try. Chairman's correct. The governor did introduce a bill this morning that would do a variety of things, but I think the shortest way to explain it is that it would, if passed as introduced, it would basically approve of, in a legislative action, the actions taken by the former governor last summer, when the various restrictions on both operating accounts and capital accounts were placed in effect. And in short answer to your question, if money were moved from the budget reserve account into the general fund, the cash made available by such a transaction would go as required to fund both operating and capital expenditures of the state. It would be basically drawn down in appropriate fashion to fund both.
Okay. I think you had that question last week, Representative Frank. I'm going back to Representative Rieger. Yes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question does tie in a little bit with the bill introduced by the... But I'm curious, in the absence of this bill, it really isn't before us today, but in the absence of that, what is the status of the governor's restrictions as far as reversing those restrictions? And what I'm really driving at is if the committee substitute for HB 89 was approved by the legislature, would there be any legislative oversight over the governor removing any of those restrictions unilaterally the same way that they were imposed the other way? Or would it be a simple stroke of a pen to increase what is the FY 87 revised budget act?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rieger, it's a little hard to respond to that. Basically, since the restrictions were put on by administrative action, obviously they could be changed by administrative action. I think the bill that was introduced this morning is an indication that the governor prefers to leave the restrictions in place on the operating budget. That's the general tone of that item. That's also reflected in his supplementals as introduced a week ago. His preference is to hold the operating budget as restricted as you find it in your committee room and to seek additional monies for those programs that are short via the supplemental route. With regard to the capital, he's basically put forth a mechanism here to allow those projects to go forward. Perhaps on a slightly deferred basis over the next two fiscal years. But if cash conditions should improve, then that schedule could improve as well. But basically, he's seeking a legislative approval, if you will, of the restriction process itself. Approval of it as introduced indicates that the operating budget would stay restricted as it currently is. Approval of it as written would indicate that there would be a scheduling and to some sort of a prioritization of capital projects that would go forward over the next 2 years. It's my assumption that he would be willing to listen to, you know, methods on prioritization of it.
Continue.
I think, you know, I can't take issue with what you said. That sounds like, I'm wondering, if we failed to pass this bill, would that be the administration's intent, how they would proceed? I'm not saying we wouldn't, but I mean, is that more or less the plan of the administration, is to continue the restrictions operating, work out some kind of a prioritization for release?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Breger, that's correct, that this does reflect what the administration would choose to do, and it's the governor's hope that by basically laying the full cards out on the table, that this would be acceptable to the legislature as well.
One last question is, I haven't had a chance to read this bill. This is an application. Is there any kind of a formula listed in here or a system of how the prioritization for release of capital?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rigg, there is no specific formula laid out. That was one of the things that it was felt would be a good subject to discuss, what sort of a prioritization is in order, what kind of arrangements. Again, this perhaps is... the bill, as introduced, is taking the worst case. Perhaps, as Milt Barker says, if our revenue fortunes do improve, then the pressure on the entire list of capital projects would not be as great, since by the normal course of events, some of the major capital projects take 3 or 4 years to spend the money anyway. So, for instance, some of the major highway and aviation projects could very well take their own time, and there would be no scheduling required. They would take that time anyway. So, but it is clearly his thought that once this concept is introduced and once it begins to get discussed, that we should follow up with a suggested prioritization. The letter, the transmittal letter, envisions working with both municipalities and the legislature to work out an acceptable approach to doing this.
Yeah, one follow-up. You referred to releasing the capital maybe in over the next 2 fiscal years. Is there any administration position on releasing capital, say, in March?
Chairman, releasing it when?
In March of this fiscal year.
Mr. Chairman, I think at this point it's a little hard to project exactly that. I think to be on the safe side, our thought is it looks pretty tight until the beginning of the fiscal year.
Representative Pushill?
I think that your answers to Representative Rieger have answered my questions, but I was just a little concerned that your first response to the chairman didn't clarify what has been in the papers and the rumor that... I'd like to try the question one more time, although you gave the answer, I think, correctly. In our approval of the transfer of the budget reserve monies, are we in any way telling the administration or making it possible for the administration to suddenly free up and make available the remaining 2/3 of the 87 capital budget monies?
Mr. Chairman, actually no more or less than any other appropriation. By moving money from the budget reserve to the general fund, it simply becomes available for the next obligation that's lawfully processed against the general fund for some transaction. So the transfer, if you will, is almost blind to that situation, in that if an item is due for payment out of the general fund, then there is cash there, then, and that's the next one to be paid. That's that's where the cash would go.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to conclude it, then what we're really looking at in terms of the policy on those capital monies is the findings and the procedure outlined in House Bill 132 that speaks then directly to those monies, 87 capital monies, being released one-third each fiscal year, 87, 88, 89, at the most. And if there's problems with that, even the administration would be authorized to do continue further restrictions. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay, in the chairman's remarks, he makes the statement that we start with a deficit of somewhere between 600 and 700 or 875 million in a deficit. That I think he's talking about about an appropriations deficit that we've heard about in the papers. And my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, I could easily be wrong, is that part of that deficit, that appropriations deficit, is because we did appropriate 400 and 25 million or so to the budget reserve fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's that's part of the cash deficit, the budget reserve fund deficit.
Well, let me rephrase my question then. If we appropriate the 425, if we repeal the appropriation to the budget reserve fund, wipe that out, get rid of the appropriation to the budget reserve fund, what then is the level of our deficit, in rough terms?
By that amount, okay. Then that would be roughly half the amount remaining.
So, okay. I'm clear on that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. But that deficit number changes because of the fact that price per barrels was used. We have estimated that it's been calculated at $13.04 per contract barrel versus what it is today. So there's, you know, there's a little positive cash flow. And that's the same calculation they have used for FY88 for their revenue sources, and they're still using the number of approximately $1.335 billion or something in that neighborhood. So that's why you see a deficit continue. Ripson Gull?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then basically you're saying up to, let's say, half of the deficit, and considerably less based on the statement just made by the chairman, but at least up to half is essentially from the budget reserve fund appropriation itself. The remaining half is going to be met by revenues that are expected between now and the end of the fiscal year, and this would basically balance it out. Is that the premise?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gall, the rest of the revenue picture is not really quite that clear.
I guess I was just basing it on the chart that showed as close to a balanced budget as possible, so I'm following up on Representative Frank's question just to make sure I understand the answer, that the deficit is caused by, in part, the obligation to the budget reserve fund, and what's really being done is we're removing that obligation and hoping that revenues will take care of the other part of the deficit.
Or revenues either from existing sources or new sources, yes.
Or from new sources. To follow up on the question that's now been asked by three people about the capital budget, then would it be a fair way to describe the outcome, something like this, that the obligations of the state in terms of operating are such that it's the opinion of the administration at this point that we would be following the same basic phased program in the existing capital project appropriations, meaning probably no money released, at least based on today's revenue forecast, until June, or July rather, and that essentially that this freeing up of funds is for the purpose of continuing the programs of state government between now and the end of the year. Is that an accurate summary, and does that draw together all of the questions and answers regarding capital projects accurately? That's assuming that this bill is not part of the discussion at this time.
The Chairman, Representative Gall, actually would free up payment of state's obligations for both operating and capital, and that there are operating and capital payments that come due under the current restriction level. So once again, the freeing up of cash is blind to what is being paid. It's whatever obligations there. It might be a check to a contractor for the construction of a major stretch of highway, or it might be the payment of a school foundation.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I didn't ask my question clearly. I meant let me say it again so it's in one unit, that these funds would allow us to continue the operating obligations of state government to the end of the fiscal year, plus follow through on the obligations we've incurred on the first third of payments for the FY87 capital budget.
Yeah, that's correct.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Frank, a follow-up question.
Thank you. So if we look at our deficit situation, our appropriations deficit, forget about the cash flow problem for a second. The appropriations deficit is, say, it was $800 million, and half of that roughly is because we have appropriated funds to the budget reserve fund that we can't touch. We need the okay or the legislation, the law, to allow us to get at those funds. It seems to me that that would reduce our appropriations deficit unless we chose to leave an unfulfilled appropriation on the books. In other words, unless we transferred the money out of the fund and left the appropriations on the books. Now, if we left the appropriation on the books, transferred the money out, we'd still have an appropriations deficit of $800 million. We wouldn't have a cash flow problem anymore, but we would have an appropriations deficit of $800 million. And I think that what you had originally proposed would have cut our appropriations deficit in half but I'm not sure. My question is that the proposed bill, proposed CS, suggests that we appropriate the balance of the fund and that we not repeal the appropriation to the fund. Therefore, we still have an $800 million deficit out there that gives the public the impression that we've got an $800 million deficit. I don't think that was the governor's original intention when he proposed the legislation, and I'm concerned that we're just creating more confusion now on the part to the public, so I'm having a hard time understanding why, if this is in fact the result of the proposed CS, if that's the result, why are we going that route?
Nope.
Is there a logical answer to that?
Mr. Chairman, I might just say that I think the way that would be viewed is that the first appropriation has in fact been consummated by the transfer to the Budget Reserve Fund of the amount of 430 some million. This appropriation would make a disposition of that. It would be moving it back to the general fund, but I don't think there is a reactivation of the initial appropriation to provide for a second transfer back to the Budget Reserve Fund. In other words, in effect, I think this Section 3 of the proposed CS does counteract, or you might say repeal, the original appropriation.
Okay, so the chairman's comments here that says we still have an appropriations on the books then would not be correct. We wouldn't have an appropriation due to the Budget Reserve Fund?
Well, there was the appropriation was made. It's effectively, it's not still on the books.
So it's not an outstanding. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner, did you want to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just the deficit, in the technical terms, of course, is the difference between the appropriated level and the amount that comes in. Whatever we may have sitting in various reserves doesn't affect the amount of the deficit until it's really the difference between the income and the outgo for the year. I guess technically you could say the year is still in deficit and we have to make it up out of reserve funds. That's probably the way to look at it. The intention of the executive, the intention of the governor, is to set out in the other bill at 132. So there isn't any plan, as soon as supposed oil prices lift, bucks or something, there isn't any plan to immediately run the streets and start money. But the processes that have been set out make sure that people are aware of what's going on. The legislature continues to keep the appropriation authority. The executive assumed that the last administration, by restricting funds, whether or not that's legally sustainable, I think, is beside the point. It was an operational decision, but this administration wants legislative ratification of appropriations and doesn't plan to operate in any other sphere.
Okay. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your comments here. I'm still a little uneasy about appropriating more to the general fund at this time than is needed for covering what you project to be the maximum amount of real call on the Treasury to pay the operating bills of state government. Because it, you know, and I've just received a copy of 132, and I've not had time to study it, but it does seem that there is flexibility to keep spending on capital projects that were approved earlier. And I guess my feeling is it would be prudent to look again at all these capital projects, as the governor initially suggested in his opening speeches to us, that we are, even though prices are up, we are still in a serious situation, and we do need to look at all of our proposed expenditures before we decide that it makes sense to spend any particular amount on any particular projects. And I think there may be, you know, some very worthy projects that should go forward, and there's others, such as the Bradley Lake Hydro project, which I've raised some questions about, and I would very much like to see those issues debated before we make a decision that proceeding with that particular project is in the state's interest. So my question would be to you, would it be sufficient to appropriate an amount short of the entire budget reserve fund to get us through the end of the fiscal year? And just looking at your maximum projection in the hole here of $315 million, we would appropriate $315 million rather than the $426 or whatever the balance would be. Would that be sufficient for your purposes?
Mr. Chairman, I would have to say yes, based on the projections. Again, I would underscore the uncertainty attached to the projections, both on the revenue side and the expenditure side. We've all seen how we can be surprised by revenue projections. We could have some surprises on expenditures as well.
Yes.
Hearing by the committee, but Mr. Barker, I believe before, pointed out the uncertainty both in the revenue projections that he used in projected cash flow for the month, but also in the expenditure side. For example, we don't know, in fact, probably no one knows, even the people who are working on the projects, what particular progress reports on capital projects will have certain amounts of money in them. For example, the contractor has material delivered to site. Gets in time for his progress. If it doesn't, it won't be on the billing. And in case we don't know when it's coming in. We don't have control over the timing of the submission of invoices for the debt service return. Those are some examples. So, for example, the $6 million that Milton projected as a potential balance through the end of the month might in fact be a negative $6 million by the time we get there. Likewise, as we know, the main revenue source of the state in the flow, which is the receipt of the tax payments for royalty and several taxes, can be subject to dramatic fluctuations in relatively short periods of time. So I guess that there is a legitimate concern that if the entire balance of the budget reserve fund is appropriated, that the administration then has the control over that money and can start picking and choosing particular administrative favorites, whether it's in the capital or operating area, into which to put the funds. If we think somehow we have the money to operate through the balance of the fiscal year, well, a couple points. One is that it's a difficult situation right now, and that we're dealing with administrative fiat in the placing of restrictions on the budget. And Steve Cooper is not comfortable with that. I don't think any of us are, either in the legislative or executive branches. And what we're proposing here is to take the existing situation as a given and live within that. And the changes that are made from it, from that base, you might say, are made with the concurrence, in fact, actual action by the legislature. Secondly, then, on the budget reserve itself, that as far as the expenditures go, that there be a constant and current accounting to the legislature of the expenditures that are made, Now, if some people know where to stand, if a portion, instead of all of the budget reserve fund, were to be appropriated, it might work, and it might not. And I guess the situation that worries Steve Cooper, in particular, I think worries the commission administration, is if we have any kind of a sag in the, at all in the income stream, now even, and we have some time comes up when we don't have, whether it's near the end of the fiscal year or near the end of some appropriation is made, that the legislature doesn't either doesn't have time to deal with the issue because something has happened quickly, or because, in fact, the legislature is adjourned to a session, then suddenly the administration is cast back in the unfortunate position of making decisions on how, what things should be restricted and where, without any legislative input, without any input from the elected representatives of the people. That's not a very good process, and what we'd like to propose is to carry out the current program, make changes in it by legislative direction, and do that. It just seems that the $400-some million that's in the budget reserve fund potentially may not be enough. It looks like under the projections, we probably would not have to draw it all down. Those are projections, and they are not any more reliable, frankly, than the projections that were used as a base for the FY87 budget last year. And I think that's important to remember. So I guess that, trying to speak a little bit on behalf of the administration, that we're all in a difficult situation. And I certainly don't want to come. None of us do want to come to the legislature and say, trust us. We think that's necessarily a good situation. But we do think that we should come and give the best recommendations as to how the present situation can be worked out. That's what we think, at least, by appropriating the budget reserve amount to the general fund. As the session goes on and as the fiscal year goes on, we'll all know more about the levels of income and gradually get a more definite handle on what's going out. And balances that are available then could be reappropriated as part of the General Appropriations Act or another appropriations back into the budget reserve fund for subsequent years. But I think that it'd be risky to cut it too close because it could get to the situation where the executive once again has to say we're going to freeze these things without any deliberative process and without any real input by people that should be involved, or reach a situation even worse where for some reason that I can't proceed right now, but for some reason it's necessary to declare some sort of emergency and draw down the budget reserve account without statutory authority, which this administration does not want to do. On the other hand, it might be a close call someday between that and turning down the lights. And so I guess what I'm saying is that if an appropriation is something less than the entire amount, given the validity of the reserve fund, it wouldn't be unreasonable to appropriate the amount.
Commissioner, the numbers that we have with the daily cash flow projections are guesstimates. They can change up or down with each day. We do have a deficit there. It's an unknown factor. We've all guessed between $600 and $800 million. Even if we gave you the money, we need to take a portion of that to take care of the deficit with the obligated, unrestricted operating or capital budget. Is that correct? Do you know what percent or what part would be used to pay for the cash flow projections? We know it. We can see it on Monday. Will the balance of that be taken to pay a portion of that deficit that we presently have?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you're speaking about the deficit between the appropriations level and the projected, the total projected income for the year, that if it's necessary, somehow necessary, to pay expenditures that for items that are outside the fiscal year 87 revised executive provisions for the budget, then I suppose the budget reserve available to pay that. That's not what the administration is proposing. We could get there if somebody comes in and says, look, restricted these funds, there's no legal authority to do it, and we're suing. Then the administration might, in fact, be forced to avoid that situation. And so then I'm trying to come back to answer your question, is that the purpose of the appropriation is to deliver it in the revised budget that the former administration has imposed only as a cost-saving measure, and as better opportunities come up, and I hope that they do, and we can make revisions.
Rips and Frank, same subject.
Yeah. On the committee substitute, you know, it says Section 3, the balance of the budget reserve fund. We're talking about the full $425 million
there.
Correct. Yes, sir. Okay, just want to be clear on that. Thank you.
Gary Pesca would like to make a statement before I go on to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Yes. Gary Pesca, Commissioner of Administration. I'd just like to add to what Commissioner Malone said about the urgency of the situation we're faced with. It's not a case where we can miss payments and just smile. Sorry. We miss a major payroll. We estimate it's going to cost us $400,000 a day in penalties. The contracts we have with the bargaining units. Penalties. So the next day, we miss 2 days, it's going to cost us $800,000 in penalties. If last year the legislature passed a bill requiring that the state pay their bills promptly or pay an interest penalty, we estimate that if we have to hold vendor payments for 1 week, the minimum amount of the vendor interest penalty will be $78,500. As the bills accumulate and we hold them for 2 weeks, it goes up to $287,000. If we hold them for 3 weeks, it goes up to $628,000. So when Commissioner Malone refers to me being concerned about this, I'm concerned about it more than just from an academic point of view in terms of what the deficit amount will be, but we're looking at actual costs if we miss payments.
Thank you. Representative Brown? Good.
Go ahead.
Representative Brown.
Okay, I was just going to say, Commissioner, are you satisfied that this language in the CS will reduce the appropriations deficit by the amount that's transferred from the Budget Reserve Fund to the General Fund?
Mr. Chairman, I read the language, and yes, I am.
Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. With respect to the point I was pursuing a moment ago, at what point in the spring would you foresee that there was extra money and some of what's being appropriated over to the general fund could be released for capital projects?
Mr. Chairman, the next logical point to take a look at this, Representative Brown, is the March forecast. If the last paragraph or two in Milt's letter prove to be correct and show up as an estimate in the March forecast, then that would be a signal that we might expect a release of activity, additional funds later in the year. The problem, I guess, I have is over the past year we have always hoped that next month things were going to get better, and they haven't. And I guess a strong argument can be made for the fact that it would be nice to see some of this money actually appear in the Treasury before we begin to spend it. So I suspect we might tend to be a little cautious. Mr. Chairman, there's one other item that I think might make this hopefully a little clearer. The Budget Reserve Fund is simply an account in the general fund. Had it not been created by statute last year, it would be in the general fund, and it would simply be, as a matter of common course, be being used to pay the various bills that come due. I think your concern about let's take a look at projects, that can go on independent of any action you take with regard to the Budget Reserve Fund, because any particular capital project or group of capital projects can be repealed or reappropriated for another purpose. So I think
you can look at this as two separate transactions. The movement of money from the budget reserve fund, which again is simply an account in the general fund, to the pure and simple plain old general fund will simply allow state government to proceed, be it operating or capital. And the other exercise that you're concerned about, the review of individual capital projects, can go on on a parallel course with that.
Just a clarification, Mr. Hogan, we did have the rainy day account last year, which we transferred that money over to the budget reserve, that special consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Davis. Oh, continue.
I was going to say, yes, it could be looked at separately, but it could also be looked at that the funding for whatever projects were approved could be appropriated at the time they were approved, rather than having the surplus available to allow the administration to make those decisions at some point in the spring administratively.
Do you want to respond, Commissioner?
I suppose if the situation changed dramatically to where the fiscal year 87 revenues approached what the legislature anticipated when that fiscal year 87 budget was approved, the arguments for restrictions on the budget, including the capital expenditures, would not be very good arguments anymore. You might find new ones, but I suppose if things changed that dramatically, then it would be pretty hard for the governor to stand pat on the restrictions. It certainly isn't very hard right now. In fact, to do anything else is less than responsible. And so I think that there isn't going to be any tendency to, let me put it this way, sneak in a bunch of capital projects out of the restricted list. If it happens at all, it's going to be something that happens as a result of something very dramatic, whether it's revenue increases, legislative action.
Representative Brown.
Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly support giving the governor the flexibility to deal with this budgetary crisis and by turning the money over to, but appropriating money out of the buffer or the budget reserve fund. But I guess I have some similar concerns about what's going to happen once it arrives in the general treasury. And I guess my question is, what is the criteria? Once that money is in the general treasury, then apparently that restricted list is the concern I have. I have a number of people in my community that are certainly very interested in getting some money for capital projects. They've went to the bank and borrowed on it, and they're waiting on it. So, and they're real concerned about that. And so I guess that's my concern, is what will be the criteria that will say this project will be now funded and this one won't. I realize that at this point that all the list of capital monies that were at the Department of Administration are now sitting in the governor's office. What's going to happen to all those? I think that's a concern maybe that was being expressed by Representative Brown. And I haven't really got any sense on what's going to happen. What's the determination of that? And if will there be a change in administrative policy once this action is taken by the legislature? Now, perhaps you can't answer that, but I think there is a legitimate concern, and I still haven't got the answer. Commissioner?
Sure. As far as I know, there isn't any change. Those changes would be addressed through the other legislation that was introduced. In the extent that the legislature wants to reorder the priorities within the available funds for the fiscal year budget, that will be up to the legislature. I'm not saying the decisions that stand right now are all the very best that could have been made, but looking at the overall picture on the budget, keeping the restrictions in place, unless there's a dramatic increase in revenue approaching the levels that were anticipated at the time the money was appropriated, is going to be the order of the day unless something happens, something dramatic happens. That or change it. One of that would be one of those things. In other words, I guess what I'm saying, if the money's not there, it can't be spent. And even under the appropriation of release of the reserve fund, it's likely to be shy in the budget.
But it's true
that the capital expenditure expenditures already authorized by the administration and the revised budget numbers, stay within those, ask and ratify those, and expenditures above the levels of FY87 administratively revised be approved by the legislature. That's the current policy. That might change. But as far as I know, there isn't any plan to change it. And if there were one, I think one would. And I think that's what the policy is right now. Just because these funds are released does not mean the restrictions are going to be lifted absent legislative action or something very dramatic happening that would mean that the arguments, the original arguments for those restrictions no longer apply because we need to save money.
So I could, just for clarification, then you don't see any change in the current freeze on the capital projects that are sitting on the books that are now in the governor's office which would disperse money to those local municipalities. You don't see any change in that policy until some future time when the legislature takes action to give some direction to the administration. Is that safe to say?
That's what the governor hopes, is to get some legislative direction in that area. The other thing, which I don't think is very likely, but I suppose could change it, is if oil prices go to the sky, right? Then the arguments for freezing the money wouldn't be as sound as they were before. I wouldn't have much merit in most people's eyes. It was pretty hard for the executive to argue that they should remain frozen. Whether or not they agree with the purpose of appropriation is irrelevant. The executive is charged with carrying out the law. Or there might be something else happen that demands the expenditure of those funds. The only thing that I can think of would be an emergency for the order. So I'm saying it has to be something dramatic.
You answer my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gripson Capone?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier, Commissioner Malone touched on a point in regard to the operating budget that interests me, and if I could ask through the chair, about this, I'd like some clarification. When Administrative Order Number 90 went into effect, the various commissioners were granted a great deal of autonomy in putting in effect the various percentage cuts within their departments. Some were more or less successful in maintaining the priorities that are set by statutory policy or by legislative intent. Others were less successful and moved in some directions that are perhaps questionable to us. The first part of the question is, have the current administration, the current commissioners, attempted to restructure within the bounds of the budget so that the operations of their departments are more in line with what is in statute or legislative intent, as the case may be? Or are we, in effect, by voting, I guess, for 132 when it comes up, in effect approving those changes in statute that are not explicitly stated here, but are implicit in what has been done, what has happened in some of the departments? And I'm first off speaking.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. I think one way of looking at the question that Representative Copeland raised is, I suppose you could look at HB 132, as related, as sort of a view on an FY87 supplemental appropriation, changing current level of appropriation. Not quite right, because a lot of the changes are in place. If you did, then the answer to Representative Copeland's question is, by legislative ratification, would the legislature be ratifying what the administration has done? The answer would be yes. So the question is, has the new administration, people in the new administration, tried to make changes in the way the budget operates and what priorities are? The answer to that question is also yes, but with the caveat that is within the fiscal year 87 revised numbers, down to the level on which those restrictions were placed. And so there's not a lot of operating latitude to make those revisions. The reason for that is simply that to go through and sort out is, like the original set of decisions, a lot of work. And secondly, it sort of detracts from the whole idea of saying, well, the budget should be constructed in such a way that the legislature understand what's going on, can appropriate the money to make sure the priorities that people see are actually met. And so we have one set of decisions was taken without legislative concurrence. It seems like to go through on a wholesale and revise that again without legislative concurrence is just adding to general confusion. It might be a good idea. I think a lot of the decisions that were made were not the best, although I realize they're made under considerable pressure of time. So I guess I feel that should be done. I can see some good policy reasons for not. I would think that there are specific areas that the legislature believes need to be, where expenditures need to be reordered within the FY87 budget, that could be handled through either the supplemental appropriations bill or potentially, I suppose, amendments to 132. But how that's done would be up to the legislature. Trying to revise the entire executive branch budget in a month or two to address what might be perceived shortcomings in fiscal year 87 advice, and to do it without the advice and consent of the legislature is not a task that anybody wants to try.
Continue. Yeah, for that.
Just to clarify what's out there in terms of the deficit and what might be relief, I need to back up for a second. When you talk about an $875 million deficit, exclude the question of revenues being different for now. What that could comprise of is something like a $300 million operating budget, cash flow shortfall between now and the end of the year, and all the remainder is capital. Is that a fair statement? Other than that $300 million operating cash flow, there's something sitting out there of non-lapsing appropriations, which is
Mr. Barker.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's confusing the cash flow situation with the appropriations. It's not possible to tie the cash situation to any particular appropriation. The money flows out of the Treasury on a first-come, first-served basis pursuant to all appropriations. Actual pattern of expenditures that determines what creates the cash flow. If you want to look at the appropriations deficit, again, the entirety of the appropriations are what create that deficit, and it's not possible to say this particular project is what is above and beyond the revenue that is expected to come in.
If I can continue, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, we know that there's an operating budget, and it was is to the FY87 revised, but when you talk about an $875 million deficit, and I assume that means that's what the deficit would be at the end of the year, I'm trying to figure out what's in there, and the reason I'm asking is to try to figure out what could be released if there were extra cash, and I'm assuming that what's in there is all capital, but I want to make sure that that's the case, and then if that's the case, I want to know what capital.
Mr. Chairman, I understand it that $875 million deficit includes the entirety of the operating budget less the restrictions. It includes the entirety of the capital budget without regard to restrictions on the theory that eventually that money is going to be spent in later years. It includes the appropriation, all other appropriations as well, the appropriation to the budget reserve fund, the rail belt energy fund, appropriations for loans, appropriations for debt service. It includes everything.
One of the things that you cannot nail down is where that deficit is, because it takes in the operating, the capital, the special appropriations, the legislation that we've passed in past years. You can't say it's just for capital. It's everything else that's entwined with it.
You know, when we looked at the handout we had the other day, and I'd go on and get into a lot of detail, but the handout showed a balance sheet for the state, a bunch of assets in one column and all the claims against it. And one of those claims was general fund, and I think it was at that time $180 million. But that had already assumed full funding for the rail belt area. Funds. And I assume that in essence there's some kind of asset sitting in those accounts, whether it's cash or, you know, the thing that's causing the deficit is those claims against the general. And my question is, if we appropriate the entire amount of the budget reserve fund, we're only going to need $300 million left. And I guess I'm trying to see if that money could possibly be chosen by us or by the administration to go to something other than capital. And it seems like everything else has pretty been the way these statements are preparing. The only thing that's really sitting out there that's left is capital, and that's it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rieger, I think you got off the track a little bit, because the $875 million deficit is with reference to the appropriation enacted, say, as a result of last legislative session. And the budget reserve fund at that time was an appropriation against the general fund, and therefore is part of that $875 million deficit. It will be paid from the general fund. That, in fact, has happened. It has been expended. Other appropriations have been partially expended, but you don't want to focus on what's expended. You want to talk here about the appropriations deficit from last session, and that includes these budget reserves and other reserve funds.
Okay, I think we're getting closer to it. And by June 30th, the last day of the fiscal year, everything will have been expended by except non-lapsing capital appropriations.
Basically, that's correct.
And so it's maybe 200 and some of that is FY87. Andrew is it holds up. Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pushill.
I had a question and comment on the disaster relief, but I'll hold until we get through with this, this topic.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I better direct the question to you, if I may, and then you can get it out to where it belongs. If I understand what's being said so far, just speaking in terms of these estimates based on the old revenues, we've got an $875 million deficit. I'm just trying to track what Representative Rieger has done here. From that comes about a $425 million figure for the budget reserve fund. Is that a good figure? So that leaves us with $450 million deficit. Now, the question I asked you earlier was if the entire, and through the chair, if the entire, if the entire amount is transferred here in this bill, 89, then that roughly brings you to break even. And I asked what was the status of the, and other members as well, what was the status of the capital project in that scenario, and the answer that we got back was that basically the restricted funds would remain restricted. And that we were talking about the hundred and some odd million dollars in released funds. So I guess there's about 213, if I recall, left over there restricted. Now, that must be part of the deficit, right? So does that mean that we could subtract 213 from the 450 and the rest of the deficit isn't operating? And if so, we're talking about $237 million of actual operating deficit. If there's 213 factored into this equation somewhere, why isn't it being spent? Do you follow the nature of this?
Okay. Yes. One of the things that you have to go back and look at is Administrative Order number 90 and 91. And that restricted, and they're stated in House Bill 132. That is correct. If you're assuming that there's $875 million in deficit, and we'll use that number just for you, and you take your $426 million or so and you subtract it, yes, we do have a deficit then of $450 million. Then if you repealed or cut further and you cut the operating budget of 213, yes, we still have a further deficit, okay?
Sorry, sir, I didn't understand the last part.
Okay, but if you repeal or cut out the capital budget that you have stated of approximately 213, you still have a deficit. You would still have to look for new revenues to cut your deficit. And you can look, and I've showed you all the options of looking at other sources, looking at capping the permanent fund, you can cap and the inflation proofing, you can take the unreserved fund. That's a debate that we'll get into at a later date.
Mr. Chairman, then, do I understand, and I think I'm following up precisely on Representative Rieger's question here. When I asked the gentleman before us what was going to account for the other $450 million, and I said, well, would that be from, let's just say, other sources of revenue, the remaining $450 in the deficit, mm-hmm. the answer was yes.
Yes.
Is the complete answer that it is not only going to be accounted for by other sources of revenue, but also by carrying over a $213 million deficit to fiscal 88 in relation to the capital project? That, you know, it only works if you don't spend the 213? If the answer is no, then I'm still a little confused. It sounds as if you're going to spend the 213.
Chairman,
the way Alaska has traditionally appropriated for capital projects, they're all lodged in the year of appropriation.
Right.
Some places phase projects in, and then the phases are lodged against different years. We have never done it that way. So whether or not you spend for your capital projects in a given year is immaterial as to whether or not they are lodged against a certain fiscal year. Those capital projects, for better or for worse, are all lodged against fiscal 87. When they're entirely spent, perhaps in 89, then they'll be off the books. But until that time, they'll be lodged against 87. So when I referred to other revenues, I meant from the permanent fund,
right.
from tax sources or something like that, to make up the additional sum. In other words, to get us cash into the Treasury that matches the value of appropriations we have.
If I'm the only one who doesn't quite follow that, I'll just wait until later. If there are others, then I could follow up with a few questions.
We'll wait till later.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the effort that Mr. Barker made in showing me the revenue projection. It answered the question. I guess I'm still kind of on that track, though, and let me put it in a different light. I've been trying to reconcile Section 3705-156 with the governor's bill and with the committee substitute. I guess my question is more philosophy. Was a budget reserve account, are we talking about one that's going to be continually funded? And if so, where are those funds going to come from, either through a windfall or whatever, back taxes settlement? Or when we deplete that fund through the committee substitute, is it gone? In other words, do we have to start over in creating a new fund?
One of the things that, even if we depleted it, one of the things that particular statute stays on the books. And we will be looking at ways to fund that, and perhaps you are right that we will have windfalls with back taxes, or Duncombe Sands comes in with 20% of the $1.1 billion into the fund, but it'll still stay on the books. And one of the things, as my last statement was also to take some of the language from the rainy day account and move it over to those particular statutes, so that we can have flexibility with the administration to work on disasters in the future. One of you want to comment further on his question? That's basically it. Continue.
That's
Ripson Frank?
My questions were related to the disaster relief.
Yep.
Okay. The governor's proclamation shows his authority under 26-23-20. I don't know if you guys are that familiar with it or somebody else in the administration needs to answer questions. But
we do have Mr. Roundtree. Would you come forth, please?
Okay. It says 26-23-20, and I'm wondering, should that be 020 in the governor's disaster emergency declaration, or is that actually as it reads? Point two. See what I mean? In his declaration, he's got 26.23.20. There's not really any such thing as 0.20. There's maybe 0.200 or 0.20. Oh, yeah, okay, it's 0.20.
0.20.
All right, that clears that up.
G2.
I'm wondering how normal the freeze-up emergency is on this use of disaster funds. Is that something that we routinely declare a disaster when we have pipe freeze-ups? What's the disaster nature of it?
Over the years, we have had disasters of many different types, and I would say this would be in line with some of the types of disasters that we have had in the past.
Have you had that same disasters in other communities throughout the state of Alaska?
Yes, I believe we had a sewer line freeze-up at one time. Oh, what?
Haines.
Okay, we did in Haines.
I got to tune my municipality into more, because I know we've had some freeze-ups there, and maybe we could look at it as a sort of problem. I don't think it was a big deal like this, but okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Still in disaster, Representative Prichot, then Larson.
Thank you. Mr. Hogan, we've had this conversation the last couple of years, and I think you and I agree that it was a good move finally to move away from a annual dipping in from the rainy day account to move towards a online budget process. And now it's my understanding that in the governor's budget we would have now $10 million seed money, I guess, if you will, in establishing or reestablishing a true disaster relief fund that's in the military and veteran affairs budget. So, but I think I want to make a point here that once again, and hopefully for the last time though, we are not really coming back with a supplemental budget because the administration has chosen to take this money or suggested taking this money from the budget reserve fund. This is very parallel, of course, to what we were doing before. Probably in this financial situation we're in, it's a moot point because we're using the same budget reserve fund to fund a lot of other shortfalls. But I would envision, once we get through this, that should the $10 million be exceeded, that the next year you would come back either in a supplemental or in the regular military and veteran affairs budget for additional money to supplement the disaster relief fund, which would be real money, not a savings account money. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Porchow, that's correct. This is a year of transition between the old type of funding for the disaster relief fund, which was an annual drawdown from the rainy day fund. Our assumption was when we began the fiscal year that there was a sufficient amount of money in the disaster relief fund to handle emergencies. Unfortunately, the major disaster that occurred in South Central Alaska and in the Rail Belt area it took us well below that amount. So there wasn't an actual lodging of disaster relief appropriations against the budget reserve account in October. And this is basically what has happened with this current one from Kotzebue, because the disaster relief fund is technically at zero. It is envisioned as, exactly as you pointed out, in the governor's budget, there's a request for $10 million in emergency or disaster relief funding. It is a budget item. It would be expended just like any other budget item. And at this time next year, that would either be appearing to be sufficient based on what we know about the year, or perhaps a little bit surplus, or perhaps a little bit under, but it would be like an ordinary budget item in years to come.
One more question, just kind of as an academic question more than anything. Next year, say you expend by November $15 million, and of course under 26-23-050, you have the ability to go out, reach into any account really, or even go to UVA and borrow money. If we don't have a buffer reserve and we don't have a rainy day account, do you have any, where would you anticipate getting the money pending reimbursement to the disaster fund?
Mr. Chairman, that's a difficult question. When we were confronted with this situation in September, October, whenever the disaster occurred, there were a variety of individual capital projects against which this authority could be placed. but the then governor chose to put it against the buffer account so that it wouldn't impede the operation of any prior capital projects. As we get to an era of smaller projects and smaller reserve accounts, I don't have a ready answer for that. I don't know where the governor would go.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is kind of in the form of education 101, and probably it's for Mr. Rountree. But could you just briefly define for us as to what basic guidelines are in defining a disaster, how it is actually looked at once the disaster is declared, by whom, how does the federal government come in, how does the state government come in, how does it relate to federal property or state property or municipal property or private property, and what sources of relief there might be in relation to that? A round-robin discussion.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson. Pretty much the criteria for declaring a disaster in the state is when the magnitude of the disaster is beyond the resources of the entity in which it is involved in the disaster. Insurance, the city may have the disaster, but not be able to fund the disaster themselves. Therefore, they request that a disaster be declared. Then the governor declares a disaster based upon the background material that our Division of Emergency Services works up for him. If it gets to be a certain magnitude and it's really not based on a dollar value, it's quite a complicated formula that the federal government uses. For instance, the recent windstorm that you had up in the Natsu Valley was covered by the Federal Emergency Management because of the magnitude, and it's pretty much a judgment call by FEMA on if they participate or not.
I guess my question is, sometime if a person lives by a river, they can expect a flood. If a person lives where the weather generally gets cold, they can expect cold temperatures. What are the guidelines, I guess, in which once a disaster is declared, as to who will receive the emergency help? Is it the private homeowner? Is it the municipality? Is it the state highway department? Is it the federal airport? Or
it would be everybody that you've pointed out would get the help. We have areas for public assistance. That pretty well covers municipalities. Temporary housing for the individual, individual family grants if they have a loss. We also fund other agencies' costs if they're involved in building an airport or a road or something like that.
And I guess the point that I was trying to get at, Mr. Chairman, is one last track if I can. One thing, of course, that has always been of particular interest in a controversy in my area has been federal floodplain insurance. In fact, the people have voted the floodplain insurance out. But yet, those who still live by rivers are eligible for disaster relief. Yet, at the same time, saying by their intentions that they really don't want floodplain insurance because they don't want that level of government over them. I guess I'm probably asking something now that I should discuss with you more in private, but it seems to me there should be some guidelines when we're talking about who gets relief and who doesn't and under what conditions. And I guess I'll stop my questions without expecting an answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I can certainly furnish you with the guidelines that we have. I can have those to you by tomorrow morning.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rauncher, I'm looking at this memo dated February 3rd from Arturo Price from Irvin Paul Martin, Director of Division of Emergency Services, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I'm looking at a discussion of the problem, the background, the cause, the impact. And under the cause, it shows the cause being a severe cold spell of several weeks of lower than normal temperatures. And I know, you know, I don't have any doubt that they had cold temperatures there. But then it goes on to say, not that, you know, not that they shouldn't be expected, as Representative Larson points out. Number two is that we got a lack of funds necessitated the layoff of public works employees, which left the city without necessary manpower to respond rapidly enough to an increased number of freeze-ups in both mains and service lines of the water and sewer systems. Well, it seems to me that we had a municipality that didn't do a proper job of maintenance at some point, that perhaps at least in some way caused part of the problem, it seems to me. I mean, if Fairbanks doesn't appropriate enough city funds through the levy of property tax to take care of its water lines, why should the state pay for unfreeze them or to repair them? And then you go on to the impact part of it, and it says that, I'm sure there's impact, don't get me wrong, but part of their justification, I guess, is that a threat to the public health exists if they have to go to a honey bucket system. And I don't know, I guess a lot of people are still on a honey bucket system. I know that the chairman's been working hard to get people off the honey bucket system, but I didn't know that it was an immediate threat to public health. It may be, I don't know. And then if you go to the next page, where it says the need,